This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knix Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
This week, I'm in a very interesting place over on Loughborough near Carondelet Park. I say interesting because I am surrounded by I don't know how many stringed instruments, mostly violins, but other stringed instruments of all kinds. I'm with Jeffrey Seitz, the owner of Jeffrey Seitz Violin Maker. Thanks for inviting me over.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for coming over.
Do you have any idea how many stringed instruments are here?
Well, I mean, we kind of estimate over 1,000 violins and a bunch of other stuff. So we've been in here for like 35 years. So a lot of stuff happens over those years, you know. So we tend to accumulate stuff. Music stores in general, if they're in business for a long time, tend to end up with a lot of things. And but we do, believe it or not, when you look around here, it doesn't look like it, but we actually do, you know, get our repairs out and we get our stuff out and we do sell a lot of things.
So it's more organized than it looks.
Well, I don't know about that. But.
So
I'm not going to claim anything.
So you said 35 years. How did it all get started?
Here, yeah. So I've been doing it for over 45 years total. You know, I was playing violin. I'm originally a drummer, and when I was a kid, I played piano and I played guitar, and then I got interested in the violin when I was in college, and met some guys. I thought it was really fun. They were playing like old hoedown music, and then we were traveling around. A friend of mine and I were traveling around out in the Northwest, and I had a violin, and it broke. And so we were in Spokane, Washington, and we went to a big music store there called Hoffman Music. And they said, well, there's a violin maker up the street. And so I went up there, and there he was. Glenn Stockton was his name, Glenn T. Stockton. And it was really interesting. We had a great conversation with him. I left my violin with him and then went back to St. Louis. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to move out there and talk him into taking me on as an apprentice.
Wow.
And I had about another year of college to go, but I just said, nah, I'm going a different direction. And so I did. I went up there, and of course he said no, you know, and I kept approaching him. It took about 10 times to get there, and I finally, he took me on, and I know why now, because people, they'll come in and look at a place like this and go, oh, wow, this is really cool. I want to do this, but then it's really a lot of hard work, and it's really tough,
sure.
So they really don't want to do it. They just like the fun part of it. And then also, Jimmy Carter was in office as president, and he had a thing called a CETA program, which was a program you could get on, and the government would help you with half of the pay if you were learning like a trade. And it was a great program. So the pay was $4 an hour. The government paid $2 of it, and they've got way more back in taxes. So that was a great investment for them.
That's great.
Yeah, that was a good thing. I'm not sure if, you know, the guy that I work for would have been able to do it without that, because it's, you're always on a shoestring kind of on these kind of businesses. You know, they're always kind of hard to keep going, and you don't always have a lot of money, and there's always this stuff like that.
So were you out in Washington working?
So I was in Washington. I spent a couple of years with him. I met a few other people that went to some of the violin making schools and got to be friends with those guys too. And then, and I just made friends along the way and worked with other people. I even worked for that big music store for a while, that Hoffman Music Company. And I was in partners with a guy who was a collector, you know, so I learned a whole bunch of other stuff. And the guy I learned from, he was a great violinist, like a classical violinist. He was friends with Yehudi Menuhin and with great violinist, and Joseph Gingold, which was a great teacher in Indiana University. And he could really play well. He was a fantastic player as well. And he was a very good maker, but, you know, he was kind of scattered. But his work was very, very neat and clean, and he taught me lots and lots of stuff. And he was also good at appraising, so he kind of taught me that too.
What are some of the keys to making a violin?
So the violin, like I always tell people, that the technology I deal with peaked in 1705. And it's really true, because you could actually take a violin from 1705 and you could play on it. And you can play all the music that you can play now on a brand new one. So they really have not changed a lot. There's been some small changes. The necks were made a little longer because violinists got more technique and they wanted a little more room on the fingerboard. And they were built very light because pitch was much lower. I think it was like at 435 cycles per second for A. Now it's 440. Some orchestras get up to 447 even. And so sometimes the structure of the instruments, the inside structure, is beefed up a little bit to make them hold the stronger strings. But other than that, they are the same. And you can use the same techniques that all those guys did back in those days, back in 300 years ago, and be successful at it. And we mostly use hand tools to do it. We don't use hardly any power tools, or I don't. You know, of course, student stuff and things like that, they're getting into CNC machines and all this stuff, and they crank them out. But I mean, if you're making a real great...
What's that? What are those?
So CNC machine, that's a machine that carves wood.
Okay.
According to a computer program. So you can just put in the parameters of a violin and it'll
chop it up and spit one out.
Yeah. You have to do some tweaking to it. But that's not the way we do it here. You know, we do the old style, use the hand tools. I even draw out my own patterns, and I do everything kind of pretty much from scratch. I have a bandsaw. I'll do a little bit of the rough sawing with, and a drill press maybe for the peg holes, and that is about it. Everything else is chisel and files and scrapers.
How long does it take to make one?
So for me, and I'm not real efficient, it takes me sometimes 300 to 400 hours to make them.
Holy cow. To make one, yeah. Holy cow.
The guys that are all set up, because I do wear a lot of hats in here, so I do repairs and I do a whole bunch of stuff. But the guys that just focus on making, they can get one between 150 and 200 hours. Wow. But that's still a lot.
I can't even do the math in my head. I mean,
yeah.
Days in a row.
So for me, if you did a full-time job, you know, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you're talking a month and a half.
Straight. Right.
Without any distraction.
Right.
Which doesn't happen in the modern world.
No.
For me.
What is the satisfaction you get out of doing this, out of making violins?
Yeah. So I it's really great. I've always kind of been good with my hands. My dad was a machinist, and he always made stuff. And it's really fun to kind of resurrect and keep the tradition going of making stuff. But I also really like making people happy. And when you make something and somebody buys it and they love it like crazy, that's a really great thing to have. Or when you even fixing somebody's stuff, you know, they have this instrument that means a lot to them, and you fix it up for them really nice, and they're just happy. I really like making people happy. That's really kind of the bottom line right there, you know. And kind of the extra bonus is that you're involved in this kind of highfalutin kind of world, you know, because it's a pretty weird and strange world. Violin is a very, very weird thing. There isn't too many things that were in use in 300 years ago that are still in use today, and they're pretty much the same as they are. Everything else has kind of changed due to technology. Mm. Really, bricklaying, maybe?
<You're right. laughs>
Making, you know, stone cutting? I don't know, but that's about it, you know?
And when you talk about the world that you're in, what describe that?
Yeah, so it can... So in my world, here's something I have to say up front here. Every violin shop kind of has its own culture. So here again, it's a strange thing because it's not like, you know, like Walmart, they have a certain business model, or even like big music stores that rent and they have horns and they have all that stuff. They kind of use a business model, but violin shops, they tend to be very custom. They're very different from each other. So mine's a little different than all the other ones. And my shop is very much a custom shop. It's very much a service oriented. We help people that are just beginners, and then we also help symphony players, people that have been even in the St. Louis Symphony. We've had, you know, people come to us for things, and it's just a big, big, wide range, and all in between that, and collectors, even guys that don't even play but collect. We work with them, everything.
So, well, yeah, I've heard of, there was one last year, I think, that sold for, I don't even know how many millions of dollars.
So one sold last year for $11 million, but one just sold about a month ago for $23 million. But it was a really special one. It was a pristine, has a lot of history. It was like one of the best that's in existence, you know. So
what was the brand?
It was a Stradivari.
It was a Stradivari.
Yeah. So yeah, Stradivari is the maker. The instrument is called a Stradivarius. So It was a Stradivarius.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was from the 1715 or something like that, which is his golden period.
Yeah. What's the most expensive one you had here, you think?
I mean, we've owned stuff that's in the six figures, you know. So we've had things that were worth $500,000 and $250,000. We've worked on stuff about that as much as that too, as well. I have a couple of people that were in the symphony that have violins between $500,000 and $1 million that I've worked on. Yeah,
I know you know Jimmy Gravity.
Yes.
And those guys over at
The guitar shop.
Yeah. Yeah, so I went over there for one of my Roaming St. Louis segments, and I was just kind of struck by the way Jimmy described working on a guitar. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't care if it's worth $1 million or it's worth $100. It's somebody's favorite guitar, and that's how I'm going to treat it. And I kind of get the same vibe from you.
Absolutely the same vibe. And I tell that to people, you know. I've worked with some people. I have a gal, Kate, that works for me, and it's like, it doesn't matter what it is. Now, there's some shops that won't work on stuff, or they tell you, go throw it away or whatever like that. But we're into fixing stuff, and you really don't know. Sometimes we fixed violins that, you know, that most people would think was nothing, and we'd fix it, and then the people come and pick it up, and they go, can you play it? And we play it, and they're just like, they start crying. They're like, man, it was like Grandpa played the last one to play it. And I think of him, and, you know, and all, and it's like, that's some real human stuff there, and it's really meaningful. And don't tell me that thing isn't valuable. You know what I mean? So we don't judge, or we just do what we can. You know, some cheap stuff is not fun to work on because everything's wrong. but you know, yeah, it's just the way it is.
That family thing, I can totally see.
Oh, my gosh.
I've had an instrument in the family for decades. Yes. And generations.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it means something to them to,
yeah,
because the sound that comes out of it isn't just any sound. You know, it was played by one of their loved ones.
Sometimes they sat on their lap while they were playing. You know, who knows what the memories were. And it's just... And some people, their parents were like really high level players. They were like really incredible, you know. And some people were high level players and couldn't afford a very expensive. They bought it at Sears, you know, on time. But still, they were great players, you know. It's a real quick story. I was in Nashville and I was at another shop. A friend of mine had a shop, and there was a violin in there that was played by a really, really famous bluegrass guy that played with all the greats, including Bill Monroe and all those guys. And the violin he was playing, it just was just a plain old Sears cheap violin, but he made history with it, you know. So don't go judge, can't be judging cheap stuff.
By the way, you showed me something in your shop that is from KMOX.
That's right. Yes. So this was a long time ago. This was probably 25 years ago or 30, even 30. Somebody comes into my shop and they said, we're related to, and I didn't write down a name because, you know, I'm bad at stuff like that. Related to the guy who was the orchestra director for KMOX Orchestra. And we have his music stand. And would you like to buy it? And I said, of course I'd like to buy it. And I still have it. I have it here.
That's great.
Yeah. And what it is, it's a cast iron, has a cast iron base on it, and has a really nice laminated, but really high quality mahogany laminated thing that you set the music on, and it's really a beautiful piece. Very simple, but very nice.
You probably know this already, but we don't have an orchestra anymore.
Really?
Darn.
But when you do buy something like that, are you just buying it as a collector and you're just going to keep it, or would you sell it? I mean, what's the point of having it?
So basically everything's for sale in this place.
Okay.
But the part of the reason why sometimes you buy this stuff is to keep them out of the dumpsters. Also, you know, sometimes, like I said, that had meaning to that person because they were related to this person, but they couldn't keep it anymore. But, you know, I took custody of it, is what I call it, because it'll be passed down to someone else, hopefully, or whatever. Maybe you guys will start up an orchestra again.
Right. Maybe, you know. That's right. Do you play still?
I do. I play. I've taken a lot of lessons because, believe it or not, I'm kind of uncoordinated. I always have been kind of clunky. And so I took some lessons, and I had some great violin teachers, and so I play mostly kind of country music, like the hoedown, square dance stuff, and then I also kind of play a little bit of New Orleans style jazz, rhythm and blues kind of stuff on violin, and I play every once in a while here, and you know, I don't play as much as I used to, but yeah, I do, and I've played a lot, you know, over the years. And I still play drums too, so I played a lot. Yeah, so I played drums with a band called the Leroy Pearson Band for many, many years down at the Broadway Oyster Bar. We were the Saturday night band throughout the whole 80s.
Okay.
And so that was, and we toured around the world and stuff like that a little bit. So,
yeah. And so I did ask earlier about how, so all these instruments that are everywhere, how do you organize them? Like, how do you know what's exactly here?
Right. So what it is what happens is these things come in every which way. So sometimes I'll buy, like, you know, I bought a collection of 150 violins at one time, you know, so, you know, or they'll just come in one at a time or whatever, or they'll be traded in. So this kind of stuff kind of accumulates, and I kind of try to keep track of the better stuff. So I know, and I have that available, because that's the bread and butter. That's the good stuff. So I always try to keep some student level, ready and some other things like that. So a lot of these things are just kind of parked, and we'll pick through them and then fix them up, because almost all old violins need some work on them. So even the new ones need work. The way they come out of the factories these days, they don't really play right. They need a tune up, so to speak. So we'll pick out kind of, you know, if we're selling a lot of stuff in, like, let's say the $1,000 to $2,000 range, then we're going to have to kind of find some of the stuff around here that's in that range there and get it ready. So we kind of do that. We just kind of pick through it. And, you know, I don't remember what everything is in here, but we just look at it and figure it out from there, basically. But we know where all the really good stuff is.
Do you have a favorite piece right now?
Oh, man. Not in particular. I just have some cool, interesting stuff. I have a violin that was made by a Scottish maker that was supposedly owned by John Randolph, and who was Thomas Jefferson's cousin. So if that was the case, then Thomas Jefferson would have played the violin. So it's a really neat violin. It's not my favorite in terms of a violin, but it's really one of my favorite stories. And then, but you know, I've had a couple of Italian violins over the years that are really wonderful. I've made a couple pretty nice things that have always, you know, that I've liked. I had one that I made, I sold it. Came back, they traded for a different thing, and then I sold it again, and it came back, and it was like, you know what, this is a good violin, I'm going to play it. So I just grabbed it and played, you know, I played it after it was owned twice.
Well, I would think that the number of stories in this place, there just got to be so many stories for every single instrument. Yeah. There's a story behind it in terms of how it was made, who played it, when they played it.
Yeah. I mean, we could sit here all day and tell stories. One that was really interesting, some guy came in with a violin. They were doing a rehab job, and there was a wall in the kitchen, and they knocked the wall down, and there was a violin in the wall. And they were like, well, you know what? In the old days, sometimes people thought, you know, it was the devil's instrument or something like that, or they didn't, you know, so they told him to get rid of it, so he didn't want to throw it away. And we're making the story up, but it's probably close to true. Didn't want to throw it away, so he just built it into the wall, and it stayed there for like 50 years or 60 years.
That's crazy.
So, you know, they all have stories like that, pretty much, you know.
What about today's, you talk about students.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the interest level for young kids in the violin, in these kinds of stringed instruments?
Right. So there's a lot of competition for this kind of stuff. And, you know, with the media and all these different types of things like that. Plus, to play the things, it takes a lot of work. It takes practice. It takes, you know, focus. So you got to get off your phone. You got to get on your violin. That's really it right there. Now, that being said, there's been some kids in here that just play like crazy. They're fantastic. They started playing when they were like 8 or 6, mm-hmm. you know, and they're really great. And they're sticking with it. But some other ones, you know, there'll be ones that are just like play really great. And they're just like, yeah, but he's going to college and he might be going to med school. And I don't know if he's going to still play. And, you know, so the career gets in the way as they get older. It's all different types of things like that. But there are less players. And part of that is that they took music out of a lot of the schools because that's where these kids get exposed. They just like some kids didn't even know that they could play music until they got in a school band, you know, and then it's just like, oh, wow, I like this, you know. So when that's gone, that really changes the equation.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It is.
So what are the prospects for your business if that
it's waned? Tough. It's always tough. And then the other thing is that there are more people like me that there's these violin making schools. A lot of them go to those things. There's other people that are really sharp business people, and then they get in the violin or they get in the music, you know, instrument world. So like when I first opened up a shop in St. Louis, which was like in the 80s, there was really hardly anyone doing it except for a few shops. And now there's maybe 10, and there was maybe just 3 legit shops, you know? So that's a big difference because the players haven't increased in that number either. Mm-hmm. So the competition is up and the players are down. So it makes it just really cutthroat, you know?
Well, Jeffrey, is there anything else you wanted to mention that I haven't asked?
I don't think so. I think, I think that I really appreciate you coming in and coming into our store. You're always welcome here, and it's great that you got a look at this place and gave me a shot.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, Jeffrey, thank you so much.
Jeffrey Seitz, violin maker. It's on Loughborough near Carondelet Park. It is a very interesting place with many, many beautiful instruments in it. Thanks for having me over.
Thank you so much, Scott.